Blog Talk Radio.
The following program contains material which may be considered offensive to some listeners and outright disturbing to others. The views, opinions, positions, or strategies expressed in this program are solely the thought property of Art Underground, who accepts no liability for the content of this program or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. This program will contain strong language, pervasive writing, thematic elements, mild verbitude, and general insanity. Listening to the program may or may not induce and or cause headaches, migraines, difficulty breathing, bleeding of the nose, mild antisocial personality disorder, failing faith in humanity syndrome, temporary blindness, sudden panic attacks, confusion, rapid pulse, dizziness, hissy fits, loss of appetite, and may even induce fits of rage. And while listener discretion is advised, the host is apathetic, unconcerned, and uninterested with any of the above problems that you may experience. We simply could not give less of a shit if we tried to. Enjoy!
There's a storm coming. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You damn well better be. This storm here, she ain't nothing like you've ever seen before. So grab hold of your bootstraps and hold on tight. This is gonna be one bumpy damn ride.
Good evening and welcome, everyone. This is American Renegade. I'm your host, Art Underground. It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, and the coronavirus nightmare continues. So let's get right to it. As we were talking yesterday when I was, you know, going through all the different police states, Oregon, with Governor Brown and her dictatorial edicts, Governor Whitmer in Michigan, and how she was treating the 77-year-old barber, I believe his name is Carl Menk, the Dallas, Texas salon owner, Shelley Luther, and how the judge had treated her, claiming her disrespect for the law when really it was basically her disrespect toward his dictatorial edicts with signing the cease and desist order, insisting she close down. That's what that was really all about. And of course, the woman that owns Big Daddy's Grill there in West Odessa, Texas, and how the Gestapo rolled up on her and her friends, and just so much more. You know, the New Jersey, the way they were acting in New Jersey. Let me see, where is it here? See if we can find, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, when he was talking back when he first gave his dictatorial edicts to shut down, and said that I wasn't thinking about the Bill of Rights at the time. Governor Inslee of Washington State with his army of contact tracers. And then, of course, how he had to back off of one requirement that he had tried to put in place, requiring restaurants to collect names, addresses, phone numbers, such things as this, of all of their customers so that they can do follow-up contacts with them. Los Angeles, talking about commandeering hotels if they don't agree to house homeless, and just so much more of this police state mentality, just ridiculous. Also in New Jersey, there was the guy that the people that own that gym, and how they were had the Gestapo descend upon them the other day as they were opening, I guess, Friday or whatever day that was when they opened up, and the Gestapo descended upon them. And I mean, it's on and on and on. Well, someone in the chat room had mentioned that there was a change in what had happened there in Oregon with the edicts put down by the governor of Oregon, Governor Kate Brown. And I didn't comment on that because I like to do my own research first. If somebody in the chat in the chat room drops a comment like yesterday when I was talking about the Oregon governor telling people that they had to stay shut down and all of this kind of crazy, you couldn't go to churches and this and that and the other and whatever. And someone in the chat room said that a judge had thrown that out. Well, I didn't comment on it because, the individual in the chat room was right, but at the time that the comment was made, I didn't know if the comment was correct or not. And so I wasn't going to elaborate on that right away until I had a chance to do my own research. And I find here, and this was in Politico, Salem, Oregon, a county judge has declared Oregon Governor Kate Brown's coronavirus restrictions null and void because she did not have her emergency orders approved by the Oregon legislature. A Baker County Circuit Judge Matthew Shortcliffe made the ruling Monday in a lawsuit brought by churches that had sued saying the social distance directives were unconstitutional. The suit had also argued that emergency powers only last for a month, and after that, Brown would have needed legislative approval, and the judge agreed. Brown said she would immediately appeal the ruling to the state Supreme Court to try to keep the emergency orders in effect. Quote, "This will ensure we can continue to safeguard the health of all Oregonians, including frontline healthcare workers, those living in nursing homes, workers in agriculture and food processing plants, and Oregonians with underlying health conditions, while the legal process moves forward." Now, Ray Hack, who is an attorney that represented the plaintiffs in the case, said in a phone interview Monday that the ruling invalidates Brown's ban on churches gathered for worship, but also the entire stay-at-home order. Now, you see, he goes on to say, "Common sense intervened after the Sacramento-based Pacific Justice Institute filed the case early this month on behalf of Oregon businesses expanding the scope. The stay-at-home order is no longer in effect. It is invalidated. If people want to get their hair cut, they can. They can leave their homes for any reason, whether it's deemed essential in the eye of the state or not." Now, that's what's happened in Oregon. As far as I'm concerned, and, I get people giving me a bunch of flack constantly about my views and opinions on things, but here's my attitude. I'm a grown-ass man. I don't give a damn how many laws you write, how many executive orders you create, how many edicts you try to put in place. I do not live under a dictatorship. I do not live under a democracy. I do not live under the thumb of anyone who seems to think that they know better than I do what's in my best interest. I am a grown-ass man. and I have it within my ability to think for myself and decide for myself what is essential and what is not essential. And when I leave my home, I assume the responsibility for what may happen to me. Now, if I happen to be walking down the sidewalk and somebody pulls up in a car and shoots me, okay, that is not my fault because I've not done anything to give anybody a reason to want to shoot me, all right? So I don't claim any responsibility for that. If I happen to come in contact with someone who is COVID-19 positive and I come down sick, I assume the responsibility for that. I took that risk. Your life is in danger from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. In fact, actually, your life is in danger while you sleep. Because there's nothing saying that you won't die in your damn sleep. It's happened before to some really good people. Everything you do is a risk. Climbing in and out of the bathtub. You know how many people slip and fall in the bathtub and die every year? Come on, man. How many people die every year because they slipped and fell in the freaking shower? How many people die every year because, you know, okay, granted, you know, it's only three steps up to your front porch from the ground level. You step up three steps and now you're on your porch. I've heard of people walking down the steps from their porch, three, four, five steps, slip, fall, break the neck, dead. I've heard of it happening. I've heard of people tripping and falling out of freaking windows, dead. I've heard of people, you know, just driving down the road and all of a sudden the damn steering goes out. Oop, dead. How many people, you know, what, I've heard of people driving down the road blow a tire. A tire blows. They lose control of the car, run off, smack a tree, dead. I mean, you know, get in their car, start the car, and all of a sudden, boom, car blows up. Dead. Because something went wrong with the car. Didn't nobody plant a bomb. It was just something shorted out. Something went wrong. I've heard of people, you know, having a little fender bender. Nothing any serious. I mean, they're only doing like maybe 5 or 10 miles an hour or whatever. The airbag deploys, dead. It's happened. People, you know, wearing their seatbelt, getting a fender bender, get cut right in half, dead. People have been hit in the head with a baseball at a baseball game, dead. Construction workers slip, loses balance, falls 2-3 stories, dead. It happens. People work in road construction. You know, there are people that work road construction who died on the job. What about people working when they were building the Hoover Dam? You know, a lot of people died on that job. That was a hell of a fall. You can get up and walk away from that one. How about people driving a motorcycle in the rain? A little bit of oil on the road there. When it rains, that oil begins to float. All it takes, motorcycle just to hit that just the right way, dead. It happens. Motorcycle hit a rock in the road. hit that rock just the right way, throw that wheel right out from under him, dead. It happens. Guy goes out hunting, got his shotgun. Something goes wrong. When he pulls the trigger, blows back in his face, dead. People hunting, sitting up in the tree stand. They take aim at a deer. They move just the wrong way. Fall out of the tree stand, dead. You see where I'm going here, people? Every day of your life, everything you do is a risk. Walking down the road, crossing the street, going for a swim. You're at the ocean. You're out there swimming. You get swallowed up by a shark. It happens. Every day of your damn life is a risk. But as adults, we accept the responsibility. I see Hamestrap in the chat room. Hey, bro. As adults, we accept the responsibility. So this argument, people going out to these protests or doing this or doing that, whatever, not wearing masks, not social distancing, you're endangering the health of other people. The only people whose health are in danger are the people at the rally, the people at the protest, and they choose to be there. They understand the risk that they're taking. But again, every day of your life, I don't care if you're driving down the road in your Mitsubishi or your Chrysler or your Dodge or your Ford or whatever, if you're on a bicycle, on a motorcycle, if you're just walking across the road, if you're going for a swim, you're walking up or down a flight of stairs, every damn day of your life is riddled with risk. Every day of your life, there's a chance that your health, your safety, and your security could be in jeopardy. So let's stop the stupid. You're pissing me off. Seriously, you're pissing me off. And this Oregon mayor, I'm glad that judge ruled the way that he did. Sorry, Mrs. Brown, your dictatorial edicts are unconstitutional. Oregon is now open for business because according to that judge's ruling, it don't matter what it is, you can go back to living your life. You can open your business, you can go to church, do whatever you want to do, because according to that judge's ruling, Governor Brown's dictatorial edicts are null and void. Which brings us to our next one. According to, and I touched on this last night, I want to get a little bit more into it. According to USA Today, virologist and NBC contributor Joseph Fair says he was likely infected through his eyes while on a crowded airplane flight. What? let me see here. Days later, after the flight, he said he was taking precautions. He was advising others to take, including wearing a mask. Here's the thing. I thought all of these airlines were insisting that you had to wear face mask and all of this stuff in order to fly. In fact, from the way I understood, after reading the article about the airports when they were opening back up and resuming flights, from the way I understood the article, it said that from the moment you walk into the airport, through the entire process, getting your ticket, going through the checking, getting on the plane, all through the flight, getting off the plane, going all the way back to the terminal, until you leave the terminal at your destination, you're supposed to have a face, you're supposed to be wearing a mask. The entire process. Case. How'd you get infected, Dr. Fair? Through your eyes? I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just kind of curious if the airports were mandating masks and social distancing and all of this other kind of stuff, how did you get infected? I think you're full of shit. Now, how do you like that one? I think you're full of shit. And just in a matter of just a few days after the flight, oops, he was sick. He got the COVID. Yeah, I think you're full of shit. All right? I honestly think you're full of shit. And that's all I'm going to give to that one. Touched on this the other day. So far, remember when they came out and said, states are opening too soon. We're going to see a spike in positive cases. You're going to be putting a lot of people's lives in danger. It's just going to be horrible. The hospitals are going to be flooded and overwhelmed. Oh no. Fear. But yet, authorities are telling us now that they're not seeing any spikes in the cases in places that are reopening. But in areas, and here's the funny part, in areas that are remaining closed, they're seeing increases in number of cases. Now, how the hell is that working out? States that are opening up, even as slow as they're opening, but states that are opening up, like Georgia, for example, cities that are opening up, going back to work, getting back to some sense of normalcy, there's no spike in cases. And as more testing is being done, they're finding less and less percentage of infections. Now, you would think, if the experts were right, you would think, as you know, if this was as bad as they say it is, that the more testing you do, the more positive cases you would find. But it's actually the opposite. As states are beginning to rev back up and more people are coming back out and getting back to their lives and testing is increasing, they're seeing fewer and fewer cases. The complete opposite of what they said was going to happen. But yet in areas that are remaining closed, somehow the number of cases are going up. According to Alex Azar, who is U.S. Health Secretary, quote, "We are seeing that in places that are opening, we're not seeing that spike in cases. We still see spikes in some areas that are, in fact, close to very localized situations. These are very localized determinations, and there should not be a one-size-fits-all to reopening, but reopen we must because it's not health versus the economy, it's health versus healthy." Adding that there were serious health consequences to not reopening. Yeah, like domestic violence was on the rise. child abuse in homes that never saw child abuse before. These kinds of crimes became more regular. A home that had never experienced child abuse, but yet after 2 months of being cooped up in that house, all of a sudden, homes where there was no domestic violence of any kind, but yet after being isolated in like that for 2 months, what about people that just simply cannot adapt to isolation and they end up committing suicide? people who never suffered from any kind of psychological disorder of any kind, if there is such a thing, all of a sudden are being diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and so on. This has not been good for the American people. Now, a guy like me who basically I'm a loner. I live, for the most part, the life of a hermit. I have very little contact with the outside world. I have no interest in going to town at all, unless I'm going to one of my doctor's appointments, and that's only because at the moment I have the ability to go and see doctors and get the treatment that I need for my lower back, because I've got some serious damage to my lower back. And can't, in fact, now we're looking at possible surgery to try to correct the problem, because I have been battling severe chronic spinal, spinal stenosis. I have severe acute spinal stenosis, and I've been battling it for, well, almost 2 years now. And it's just got to the point to where it's literally crushing my spinal column. Literally crushing it. And this is what's causing the pain and why I'm having so much difficulty with my legs. So now they're looking at possible surgery to try to correct the problem. If it weren't for that, I wouldn't go to town the few times that I do go to town every month, because I don't have any reason to go to town. So for me, I've been doing this, you know, isolated home thing for years. It's normal for me, but I like it. I've lived a loner's life, Christ, 40 years. I like it. I like being left the hell alone. I like dealing with people on my own terms. So I say, open up. Stop the stupid. Open up. Now, here's an interesting one. And this I found in the New York Times. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Y'all remember her? Well, she's using the $2 trillion coronavirus stabilization to throw a lifeline to education sectors that she has long championed, and directing millions of federal dollars intended primarily for public schools and colleges, she's redirecting it to private and religious schools. This is a direct violation of the intent of this particular package. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Securities Act, signed in late March, included $30 billion for education institutes turned upside down by the pandemic shutdowns, about $14 billion for higher education, $13.5 billion to elementary and secondary schools, and the rest for state governments. Now, what this tells us is that these monies were supposed to go to public education, because, see, here's the thing with private schools and religious schools, they don't get public funding. That's why they're called private. They don't get public funding. They don't get government funding. They are completely funded by the parents of the children who go there. And they were not qualified for any of this money. But yet, for some reason, Ms. DeVos decided to take it upon herself to redirect funds I wonder if there's going to be any accountability here. I wonder if she will be charged with, I don't know, what would you call that? What kind of crime would that be? Embezzlement, maybe? Or conspiracy to redirect funds illegally? I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, there's got to be some law against what she did. But then again, you know, probably nothing will ever happen about that. She used $180 million of that money to encourage states to create micro-grants that parents of elementary and secondary school students can use to pay for educational services, including private school tuition. She's directed school districts to share millions of dollars designated for low-income students with wealthy private schools. And as a result of this, she has depleted, or nearly depleted, the 2.5% higher education funding, which equals about $350 million, set aside for struggling colleges to bolster small colleges, many of them private, religious, or on the margins of higher education, regardless of need. The Wright Graduation University for the Realization of Human Potential, a private college in Wisconsin, had a website debunking a claim that it's a cult. They got $495,000. Damn. All right, here's an interesting article. And this is about the economy. Let me pull this up. All right, before we get to that, I want to pull up my internet here because I've got an article. I need to mute this so I can get ready. I've got a clip here. Let me cue it up. We've heard about Donald Trump for nearly 2 weeks now, I guess, almost 2 weeks. He's been taking hydroxychloroquine. And we got Nancy Pelosi. He's our president, and he really shouldn't be taking something that hasn't been tested. Lady, it's been around for 40 freaking years. It's been tested. It's been approved. You just don't like it because it challenges what you're saying. So yeah, why don't you do us all a favor and go crawl in a hole somewhere? But there are clinical trials. Headline reads, CDC coronavirus mainly spreads through person-to-person contact and does not spread easily on contaminated surfaces. The CDC with this, the article basically has said that the CDC is backpedaling. It was talking about, you know, you got to be sanitizing all surfaces at all times because it's an easy way to get contaminated. But now they're backpedaling on that, saying, well, you know, actually, really, it's not surface contact we need to be worrying about. It's person-to-person contact. You know, I've been saying for a long time, people need to stop trying to sterilize the damn world. We live in a world full of all kinds of weird germs, bacteria, and viruses. And the more you try to sterilize, the more damage you do to your own immune system, which is why you don't see me sterilizing. My home, I live in a virtual Petri dish. I allow myself to get dirty. I don't wash my hands every 5 minutes. I might even go 3 or 4 days without a damn shower if I so decide. And hell, I've gone a lot longer than that. But I've allowed my immune system to do what it was intended to do, develop and fight off infection and disease, which is why I never get sick. Haven't had a vaccine in over 35 years and haven't been sick in probably over 30 years now. And I'm proud of that. But I don't live in a sterile environment. And I don't worry about what might be on the surfaces that I touch. But Donald Trump's been taking this hydroxychloroquine for almost 2 weeks now. And I got a clip here clinical trials underway for potential drug to stop cytokine storm in COVID-19 patients. This is very interesting. I didn't know, I'd never heard of cytokine storm, but apparently this is something that actually happens in your body. So take a listen to this, and I'm going to let you make up your own mind what you want to believe.
Unanswered questions about the coronavirus and how it attacks the body, but one potential treatment focuses on drugs that help regulate a patient's immune response to the virus. Senior medical correspondent Dr. Tara Narula has details.
One of the biggest mysteries surrounding COVID-19 is why some patients show mild symptoms while others become gravely ill. Molecules called cytokines may hold a clue.
Cytokines are a very powerful weapon in our immune system, and we need them.
Dr. Benjamin Lebwohl is an epidemiologist at Columbia University.
We do think that cytokine storm is responsible for most of the bad consequences we see in severe COVID-19.
As the body fights COVID-19, overproduction of these molecules can trigger a cytokine storm where the immune system attacks the body's own vital organs like the lungs and heart, causing tissue damage. Drugs that block cytokine function are already being used for inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis.
I was willing to accept the side effects because I felt pretty bad.
In late March, ER resident Dr. Andres Maldonado tested positive for coronavirus. Along with high-flow oxygen, hydroxychloroquine, and antibiotics, his colleagues at New York's Jacoby Medical Center also gave him tocilizumab, a drug that blocks the IL-6 molecule, one of the main cytokines that trigger inflammation.
The next day, I just never had a fever. It never came back.
Do you feel like the tocilizumab made a difference in your course?
I can't say 100% that it was this drug, and we don't have enough data on any of these things.
To get that data on tocilizumab, also known as Actemra, clinical trials are now underway. New Orleans' Ochsner Health trial is led by Dr. Julia Garcia-Diaz, who says taking the drug early will be critical.
If they're being intubated for 2 weeks and the other organ systems are failing, I think that it comes to a point that it's probably a little too late.
Just 2 weeks after being discharged, Dr. Andres Maldonado is back at work at Montefiore and Jacoby Medical Centers.
I'm completely overwhelmed right now.
Helping others battle COVID-19.
I share with them, like, you know, I had it too. I was in the ICU and I got better. And that seems to be reassuring to them that, look, I'm back at work standing.
So, he was given hydroxychloroquine and other things along with it. And he's up, about, back to work, doing what every good doctor should be doing. But remember, Nancy Pelosi says that it's not been tested. Okay, let me readjust my settings here. So I can get back to this. Now with that, there is this, where is it? I touched briefly on it last night. I wanted to get back into it today because I think this is pretty important. With that, all right, we've got this doctor. He came down sick with the COVID-19, ended up in the hospital, doing the respirator thing and all. They gave him hydroxychloroquine and some other things. He's back up. He's doing good. He's back to work, all this. So let's talk a little bit about treatment for COVID-19. We know that there are facilities around the country that have told us they're researching, they're working with hydroxychloroquine, they're actually giving it to some of their patients who have tested positive. They're getting great results with it. It seems to be having a good effect when you combine the hydroxychloroquine with other other things, including antibiotics, as was this doctor here, and all of this, good results. They're seeing positive results. It seems to be having an effect. Well, Business Insider article came out yesterday. Moderna on Monday released the first human results from trials of its coronavirus vaccine. In a small number of healthy volunteers, Moderna's vaccine helped create immune response that might help protect people from being infected with the novel coronavirus. The biotech plans to start additional trials immediately, hopes its vaccines could be ready for emergency use this fall. In a milestone movement in the race for a vaccine, the first results in humans showed Moderna's vaccine candidate led to antibody responses in a handful of healthy volunteers. Now, the Massachusetts biotech on Monday described the immune system response to the vaccine from this first small study that was primarily focused on safety. The results don't yet show whether the vaccine would prevent people from being infected with the virus. Finding an effective vaccine has become a global priority in ending the pandemic. Now, this trial was conducted by the U.S. National Institute of Health. Moderna is planning to soon start a mid-stage study and then begin a late-stage trial in July. They hope the vaccine could be ready for emergency use this fall, a timeline with no precedent in the history of vaccine development. This vaccine is being called mRNA-1273. Now, this mRNA has demonstrated its speed, with Moderna being the first to enter the clinical and now the first to release human results. It's never led to an improved vaccine. The Cambridge, Massachusetts biotech is now hoping its coronavirus vaccine can be its first, eyeing full regulatory approval in 2021. So, it shows to be safe. They didn't have any, according to their reports, this mRNA 1273, I've already closed it down, so I think that was 1273 if I remember correctly. Let me see, 1273, yeah, I was right. This mRNA 1273 didn't show any bad side effects. It appears, by all accounts, to be completely safe. So now the next phase, since they've gotten through the safety trials to make sure it's safe, now they need, now the work begins to tweak it and make it an effective anti-coronavirus vaccine. That's the objective here. Now, I want to comment on this whole concept of vaccine. Remember, they keep telling you every year, get your flu vaccine, get your flu vaccine, get your flu vaccine. All right. There's no such thing as a flu vaccine. That's a myth. I don't give a damn who you are. If you're willing to accept logic, reason, and science, it's easy to understand that there's no such thing as a flu vaccine. A vaccine, like the polio vaccine, which I got when I was little, the smallpox vaccine, which I got when I was little, the measles vaccine, which I got when I was little, and so on. You don't have to go get them every year, do you? No, it's a one-time thing. You get the vaccine once, you're good for life. That's a vaccine, or also known as an inoculation. It inoculates you for life. If it's something you have to get, like the tetanus shot, now, of course, you have to get a tetanus booster every, I think it's, they say every 5 years or something. I don't get them because I ain't worried about it. But the tetanus shot is not a vaccine because it's only good for a few years. It's a shot because you have to keep going back every so often and getting another one. The flu vaccine isn't a vaccine. It's a shot. That's why you have to, but you have to get it every year, which kind of sucks. And the vast majority of people that come down with the flu every year get the flu vaccine. Now you, or flu shot. Now you figure that one out. I got a better idea. Don't get the flu shot. Don't get any of this other bullshit shots. You don't need them. Let yourself get sick. Your best friend comes down with the flu. Go suck face with him. Go let him breathe all over you. Let him cough all over you. Whatever it takes for you to get sick. Couple weeks. At the worst, you'll get over it. And this might take several years of getting sick, but eventually you will develop antibodies to the flu, to all of the various flus, because there's a lot of different strains of flus. And then, like me, you'll never get the flu. I don't get the flu. Ever. I haven't had the flu, I bet you, in 25 years since the last time I've had the flu. I don't get the flu. But even if they do come up with a coronavirus vaccine, I'm not going to get it. Let me double check, see where we're going here. Okay. We're not going to get to that one. Major relocation, major reallocation shock from coronavirus will see 42% of jobs evaporate. Permanent job losses are likely to be a feature of the eventual U.S. recovery, according to University of Chicago research, which estimates that 42% of recently unemployed workers will not return to their jobs amid the profound shock stemming from coronavirus lockdowns. I don't have to read any more of that because I can explain to you exactly why this is going to happen. A lot of your small mom and pops, your brick and mortar stores, are not going to reopen because after being shut down for 2 months, they have lost all liquidity and they can't afford to reopen. They're done. They're broke. They have lost so much revenue that they couldn't afford to open back up if they wanted to. That's going to be a big chunk of the employment force right there, the labor force. Because the majority, this is what a lot of people don't get, the majority of jobs are small mom-and-pop businesses. They're not big corporate enterprises like Walmart. Yeah, Walmart employs a lot of people. Amazon employs a lot of people. These big multi-million dollar corporations, they employ a lot of people. But the majority of jobs are small businesses. The majority of jobs that are created every year are from private entrepreneurs and small businesses that open up, creating new jobs. That's where the majority of jobs come from. And because so many of these small independents, these small mom and pops, have lost so much money that they can't, they'll never open back up. They're gone. The job market's real hard. The labor force is taking a big hit here. We are seeing unemployment numbers almost identical, and in some cases worse than that of the Great Depression. Every bit of gains made since the beginning. And I'm not a big Trump fan, but all of the gains made since the beginning of the Trump administration, 3 years worth of gains, all gone in just a few short weeks. Okay, got a clip here I want to play while we still have a little bit of time. Yep, it's 5 minutes. It's a 5 minute clip, so we got time. The liberal media does a 180 degree flip on the FBI. Why? Well, because they're going after the Trump administration. Here's the clip.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. The FBI scrutiny over the handling of the Michael Flynn case just beginning, and critics say many in the media being unusually quiet about it. The New York Post editorial board saying, quote, media liberals used to denounce the FBI abuses until the Bureau went after Team Trump. Then they said, hey, this sounds good. Here to discuss, former Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI's Counterterrorism Division and author of In Their Own Words, Terry Turchi. Terry, have you noticed the flipping of sides, so to speak?
I sure have, and it's something that's kind of surprising, but on the other hand, over the years, the radical left element in both the Democratic Party and the media essentially wanted the FBI to rebuild so it would be a more comfortable kind of fit for them. And that's actually what Robert Mueller spent many years doing. And it became so bad, in fact, Brian, that when Mr. Mueller left in September of 2013 and James Comey was coming on, FBI employees, and I'm told hundreds of them, signed a letter. And essentially the letter said, the FBI is being deliberately led in the wrong direction, and we have some chance and some time to turn it around, and we hope you do that, and we'll be committed to helping you. Comey ignored the letter and kept on the same course, and you saw what happened in 2015 and 2016. The FBI hit the rocks, and so did the country.
Right. So I want you to give you this is what you're talking about. Just to back up your thoughts, how the Democrats used to be very suspicious of the FBI. And now they're just loving what the FBI is doing. The Atlantic headlines, how the FBI lies can damage society, civil society. The Daily Beast in 2017, the FBI's war on civil rights leaders. Would Martin Luther King Jr. be spied on today? That was in 2013. That's a CNN headline. Now it seems to have flipped, and they don't seem to have a problem with all these unmaskings. In fact, the approval rating among Democrats in 2013, it was 44%. Now in 2018, it's at 64%. So for the most part, the media is just downplaying the significance of anything with the Flynn case. Listen.
There's no conspiracy if the allegations are true. Michael Flynn admitted that he did what is alleged.
An unfair disparaging of the intelligence community process.
He literally pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI.
But of course they don't tell you, Brian, that we've changed our whole rules about guidelines and classifications after what Hillary Clinton got by with and how careless she was with 30,000 emails. So the bottom line is the FBI that used to be fidelity, bravery, and integrity was rebuilt and recast as an FBI all about diversity, equality, and social justice. So it's a better fit for the people who now are not going to turn around and complain about exactly what they wanted. And that's a real dangerous time for us. There should be no kind of political agenda or bias inside the FBI. And yet that five-page letter presented to Director Comey was all about political bias and political compromise of the FBI. And it should really worry us all, because we still don't know the truth about all the things that happened in the last 4 years to essentially subvert a presidency.
Yeah, just keep in mind, it's just a simple tin way to look at the Michael Flynn case. If you look at the case, the FBI agents didn't think he lied. There's no recording of the conversation. And days later, a heavy edited 302 was written up, and we can't find it today. So for you just to say he lied and he should be going to jail and the deal he cut he's going back on, that's just a simpleton way of looking at it. It's not where the facts are. You have to actually put some effort in. Terry Turchi, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Hmm. Yeah, I just noticed, Hamstrap, that link that you posted says that the police have actually arrested people at that New Jersey gym. That I didn't catch. I'm going to have to go read that. That's like, oh, shit. Damn. Thanks for posting that. That gives me something to look at after the video or after the broadcast tonight. Thanks for posting that. I hadn't noticed that was about the police arresting people. Thank you. I'm going to check that out. Anyway, the left stream media is, boy, they really love the FBI now. Isn't it interesting how they keep, you know, they're so quick. They flip like pancakes on a hot griddle. You know, I mean, they're for it before they were, you know, they were for it before they were against it, or were they against it before they were for it? You can't hardly tell anymore. You know, it's kind of like, we need to believe the women. Well, unless, of course, it's a Democrat who, yeah. Jesus, it's crazy. I don't know. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. I will not be here tomorrow night because tomorrow night is Spreaker.com. The channel is Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. And it is Wednesday night instrumentals on Spreaker.com. Channel is Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. Also on Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio, Suzette Live Talk every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Thursday nights are RZ's Tunes, 8 p.m. Eastern. Friday nights are Smokey. He's playing tunes for you. I guess that's 8 p.m. Eastern. I'm not sure. Then on Saturday, RZ's Free Speech Zone. You never know where he's going to go. It's all about politics and whatever else he decides to get into that night. 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays. And then Sundays for 3 hours with me, beginning at 7 p.m. So, again, that's Spreaker.com. The channel is Ideas of Bulletproof Radio. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., 3 hours of, well, karaoke-style music. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, no matter how hard they work to intimidate you, don't ever be afraid to stand up, speak out, and let your voice be heard. Till next time, Thursday, back here, 9 p.m. Eastern. For American Renegade, I'm Art Underground. Be safe out there.
Thank you.